actually, we're in Hebrews chapter 9. Yeah, I think I told you yesterday we were going to be in Hebrews chapter 8. I thought that's where we left off. It's been so long, part 12, you know, with the weekends in between of the lost 10 tribes of Israel. I've kind of forgotten, but looking back, now I see we're going to start here in chapter 9 of the book of Hebrews. Hi, everybody. How you doing? This is Martin Zender, and I got to tell you what I saw in Johnstown today. I saw this black woman. She looked kind of old. She was frail, walking really slow, hunched over a little bit, carrying two blue balloons. I mean, it was really odd. And I thought, you know, whatever it takes to get you through the night. And I think they were like her pets. She might not have been mentally correct, right? You know, she was maybe a little off. But part of it was sad, like futile and just really pathetic. And another part of it was sweet. And, you know, it would have been nice just to see those balloons lift her off this earth, take her away to a happier place. Because Johnstown is not a happy place, generally. I mean, it's happy on the track at the Y, where I work out. I like the track. I get in a zone. Like, it's very small. It's on top of the gym, and it's 21 laps to the mile. So I go 6 miles a day on it, so I'm doing 126 laps. And you think, Zender, you're like a gerbil on a wheel. Well, no, and I resent that. I resent that. A gerbil on a wheel? Really? I get in the zone. So I'm wearing my earphones, and I get in the zone. And you start going around that thing, and you get lost in your own thoughts. And it's just interesting. I don't know why. I'm comforted by routine. That's why. You're right. You're absolutely right. I am comforted by routine. I hate to admit that almost. Why should I? I've been in routine. My early life was wonderful routine, wonderful stability, so I like going around that track. It's like consistent. So much in life is helter and skelter and hither and thither and change. So I like the repetitiveness. It's like, there's that again, there's that again, there's that again. Oh, there's that again. There's that again. I like it. I'm sorry, but I like it. So we're in Hebrews chapter 9. Now I'm going to read a weird passage to you from Leviticus, but first this. I think we left off around verse 13 because we were talking about the tabernacle and the parable with the eons. And that was in verse 9, the worldly holy place, a parable for the present period. Sorry, Hebrews 9:9, the parable, the tabernacle is a parable for the present period of time, namely the eons. And so I'm pretty sure we're on verse 13. For if the blood of he-goats and of bulls and the ashes of a heifer sprinkling the contaminated is hallowing to the cleansing of the flesh, how much rather shall the blood of Christ, who through the aeonian spirit offers himself flawless to God, be cleansing your conscience from dead works to be offering divine service to the living and true God. See, this is interesting. I got to comment on this. Dead works. There are certain works of Israel that are dead works. That is, any work coming, springing from the well of self-righteousness. That's a dead work. And yet, how many times have we said here that Israel is expected to produce fruit, i.e. works, worthy of repentance? So it's not that they're to get rid of works. They're to get rid of dead works. And I'm convinced that self-righteousness will disqualify you for any kind of faith, whether in the circumcision or the uncircumcision evangel. Because Paul says in Romans chapter 10, I'm testifying of Israel that they have a zeal for God, but not in accord with recognition. Seeking to establish their own righteousness, they are ignorant of the righteousness of God. So seeking to establish your own righteousness is anathema in either gospel. Free will. Anathema in either gospel. It can't be your will. Having said that, now give up the dead works to be offering divine service to the living and true God. So that you're still expected to do divine service, but now it's in a reaction to what Christ did for you on the cross. And I'm speaking of Israelites too. He still did something for them at the cross. They still have to acknowledge his messiahhood and their inability to perform the law. They still have to start there, just like the uncircumcision, except there's no law. The uncircumcision, no confidence in flesh. But Israel, and that's the end for the uncircumcision, but Israel has to go on from there and prove it. All right, but here's the point. Blood of he-goats and of bulls. I'm going to take the broad picture here first, and the broad picture is that a goat and a bull, an animal, how can an animal picture the excellency of Jesus Christ? Exactly, and that's the point being made here. Everything in Hebrews is much better sacrifices, much better blood. A better priest that abides, that doesn't die anymore, doesn't have to repeat the ceremony over and over again. But really, goats and bulls? There's no comparison. And yet God saw fit for the goat and the bull to be a comparison. And it was a comparison, but very, very dim. And personally, I don't really like to go back and look at it. I'm content that, okay, I got it. Big picture here. Jesus Christ's blood is better. An Israelite who was trained to see those goats and bulls killed needs to move on, needs to see that that was a temporary expedient. It was a demonstration of the coming one. And now that he's here, you Israelites don't need the blood of the bull and goats. The nations will still need that in the millennium, but you won't anymore. Now, the reference here to the blood of goats and bulls is from two different places, Leviticus 16 and Numbers 19. Now, Leviticus 16, let's go to verse 8. Aaron shall cast lots for the two goats, one lot for the Lord and the other lot for the scapegoat. Then Aaron shall offer the goat on which the lot for the Lord fell and make it a sin offering. So this is the sin offering. In this case, it was a goat. So most of you know all about the sin offering, but now we're getting to this bull mentioned in Numbers 19. Now, we're going to talk about the red heifer a bit, and it's all typical, it's all allegorical, it's all a picture of Christ, and to tell you the truth, this is not my specialty, to take this apart and show you how every little bit of the sacrifice of the bull or the red heifer points to Christ. It's just enough for me to know that it's true. And I find the details disturbing. I'm sorry, but if anyone but God demanded these things, it would be crazy. He would be locked up. This stuff, I'm sorry, but it disturbs me. I'm glad to look at Christ. I don't want to see the goats. I don't want to see any of this detailed ceremony. It would come across as superstitious if it were anyone but God instructing Israel to do these things. Numbers 19, verse 1. Then the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, "This is the statute of the law which the Lord has commanded, saying, speak to the sons of Israel that they bring you an unblemished red heifer in which is no defect." Well, the type of Christ there is obvious. No sin, pure. I mean, not that the goat didn't, or not that the bull didn't have sin or wasn't a creature, but that it was outwardly beautiful, not a blemish on it, to typify the coming Christ who would be sinless, without spot or blemish, and on which a yoke has never been placed. See, this stuff's loaded. Every sentence is loaded. The yoke was never placed on the bull. The yoke of sin was never placed on Christ. And you could probably come up with so many other analogies there. "And you shall give it to Eleazar the priest, and it shall be brought outside the camp and be slaughtered in his presence outside the camp." This offering was outside the camp. Jesus Christ suffered outside the camp also, because this was a detestable thing. It was becoming sin. "Next, Eleazar the priest shall take some of its blood with his finger and sprinkle some of its blood toward the front of the tent of meeting seven times." This is where it gets weird. I'm sorry, to me. "Then the heifer shall be burned in his sight. Its hide and its flesh and its blood with its refuse shall be burned." Everything in it to be burned. "And the priest shall take cedar wood and hyssop and scarlet material and cast it into the midst of the burning heifer." So they're taking wood and hyssop and scarlet material, whatever that is, and casting it into the midst of the burning heifer. So all this animal is smoldering. They're throwing this stuff into it. The priest shall then wash his clothes and bathe his body in water, and afterward come into the camp. But the priest shall be unclean until evening. The one who burns it shall also wash his clothes in water and bathe his body in water, and shall be unclean until evening. Now a man who is clean, listen to this, shall gather up the ashes of the heifer, deposit them outside the camp in a clean place, and the congregation of the sons of Israel shall keep it as water to remove impurity. It is purification from sin. And the one who gathers the ashes of the heifer shall wash his clothes and be unclean. This thing was so unclean. It was so dirty that you didn't even touch it. You had to go wash yourself and bathe yourself. God's making a point here. That's true. One thing I take from all this, besides that the sacrifice of Christ was perfection itself, is the detail. There is so much detail in the Levitical law. Minute detail concerning how many times you're to sprinkle it. Sprinkle the blood. And if you did it one time less, you are in big trouble. I mean, look, and sprinkle some of its blood toward the front of the tent of meeting 7 times. If you did it 6 times or 8 times, you were a dead man. And so God is so detailed, and he sends his Christ, and he leaves no detail undone. He takes every single one of our sins. Nothing is left. No emotion you have, he hasn't felt. No pain you felt, as he never felt. The detail is tremendous, and I just told you I'm not really interested in all the details of the sacrifices, but I at least learned the lesson of it, and it is this, that nothing was left undone. When Christ came, he took care of everything. As superior as his blood is to the blood of goats and bulls, so the superiority of the effectiveness of his sacrifice, as if you could come up with anything that he doesn't answer. You see, it's the details of the sacrifice. It comforts me in that way that when Christ comes, he blows the roof off. He takes it to the next level. It's greater again, so much greater than the blood of goats. And now just take it past the blood and get to the practical aspects of it, the things in your life you need delivered from. Are you telling me that the bull, that the blood of the heifer and all that, that God considered that to have covered the sins of Israel for a year? How could it possibly be that there could be anything you do that would shock him, take him by surprise, that the Son of God did not answer for, did not address at the cross? So much better, so much better. Do not think for a second, do not rest uneasy for even a moment that you could outdo the cross or out-sin grace. You can't.